Welcome to Croxley Green Baptist Church Sermon Podcast.
Just as we're coming to look at these two passages, let me begin by saying a great big thank you to you for your friendship over the years. As Lisa mentioned, this summer marks 30 years since we were called to be one of the pastoral couples here. I was saying at 9:15, that doesn't make me feel any younger. As for you, well, I'll leave you to think about that. Those of you who were there when we were called 30 years ago, and I was the child pastor, of course, that's why. But, Rosemary, of course, being older than me, it was, you know, she's not done so well over the years. But no, but genuinely, it is a great testimony to your friendship and your faithfulness to us over the years, and you know, through that we've seen God's faithfulness and God's friendship to us. So very sincerely, thank you for all the different ways you've stood with us and expressed that love and that care. I also got gently scolded in the coffee for not mentioning the children, so in two sentences, our three children are doing well, thank you very much. Not so much children, but there you are. Luke and Karis are living with us still. They tend to come and go, but just now to be close to Paris, they're living in our apartment. And Lydia is living here and getting married, in fact, in the month of August in Milton Keynes. But that's okay because she's not 3 years old anymore. She is 26 and a half, I think. So there you are. She'll be getting married to a guy from Coventry and making their home in Milton Keynes at the end of August. Let's go back to our two passages, shall we? Let's go back to these two situations. Two lepers, in fact, as of course you read. The first being a Syrian commander, Naaman. This means he was a high-ranking general in the Syrian army. He was a political general and also an enemy of Israel. When he looked in the mirror, he saw the trouble spots of that skin disease. He panicked, of course. Who wouldn't? Leprosy was the most dreaded of diseases. Not only did it threaten your health and your whole life, but it was a social disease. It made you unacceptable. It made you ritually impure. It barred you from church and from other public life. And as the general stared into the mirror, he imagined his entire life as he knew it collapsing in a moment, and he'd become a nobody. Naaman needed help. And his little slave girl told him about a healer in Israel. He was willing to go to his enemy for healing. But he was a pretentious man, so he went to the Israelite king, who of course could not help him at all. And finally, against his better judgment, his advisors persuaded him to go to Elisha, this strange guru-type figure who reportedly had healing powers. The general expected to be greeted by the healer in high fashion, him being a high-ranking general and so forth. But the prophet was indifferent to his coming, scarcely noticed him. He said to the general, "Oh, go and jump in the River Jordan, you know, seven times." A little bit like saying, "Oh, you know, take a couple of aspirin and call me in the morning." Again, against his better judgment and at the behest of his advisors, Naaman did go to the Jordan, a rather piddling little river in Israel. And the text says, his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. The disease was gone. The skin was smooth and sweet as a baby's, and Naaman could resume his prestigious life. The story doesn't tell us how that healing happened, wanting us only to be amazed at the cure. The second leper has fewer column inches. He's a leper without a name or without a credentials. Just, I'm quoting, a man with leprosy. He came to Jesus, he tried everything, and now he comes to Jesus, who at the very start of his ministry was also a man without credentials, by the way. The second leper, he comes and meets with Jesus, and the recounting of that episode is very short and terse. The leper says, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." Jesus is moved to compassion and says, "I am willing, be clean." And Jesus touches him. He puts his strong hand on the sore skin. He risks touching the contagious disease and thereby making himself contagious too, making himself socially unacceptable and ritually impure. Jesus risked all of that in his compassion for this man. And says the narrator of the man, immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. It could have been that the leprosy would have defeated the health-giving capacity of Jesus. No one knew what might happen. This is the very beginning of Jesus' ministry. But it worked the other way around. And instead, the health-giving power of Jesus overcame the contagious disease. The force of life overwhelmed the power of death. The power of creation nullified the threat of chaos. In brief, life wins. The response to the healing on the part of the two lepers is worth noting. The general is elated at his baby-like healed skin. Of course he is. He understands the source of his healing. We read, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel." But after this doxology, the text goes on to say that he tried to pay the healer. Perhaps the general still thinks that health is a commodity and should be for those who have the means to pay for it. But nonetheless, as he sets off home, he is grateful to the God of Israel. The nameless leper in the story of Jesus is a bit different. Jesus tells this healed man to go to the priest, but not to go public. In his joy, however, the ex-leper disobeys Jesus and is very public. We read, "He went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. He told about Jesus. He told about Jesus' power for life." Both healed men are grateful to God, though for obvious reasons they show it in different ways. Now, I'm assuming that you are a bit like me this morning and that this is not your story. I'm assuming that none of us is suffering from leprosy. But leprosy in the Bible becomes a metaphor for all kinds of diseases and malfunctions. Some of us could be HIV positive this morning and might have found that that is a difficult disease with a social stigma, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may have an addiction that has a power over us, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may be in a tough marriage or on the edge of a broken marriage, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may have broken relationships with our parent or with our child, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may have made bad decisions in the past and wish we could undo them but can't, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may think, really, we're a phony, and we're wondering on which day we're going to get found out, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may feel a wistfulness that life is not turning out the way we would have wanted it to, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may be doing okay, personally, I hope that's the case, but wondering about all the brutality and injustice and poverty and, I don't know, prejudice that exists around us in this society, somewhat like leprosy. Some of us may have reached the conclusion that there is a deep disorder marking our world with which we collude or against which we resist, somewhat like leprosy. Through both Elisha and Jesus, we see God's good intention to overcome the leprosy that threatens to undo the world, threatening both the prestigious general and the nameless man, because of course this is a disease that overrides all barriers. And notice that in his first sermon in the Nazareth synagogue, after the reading of the Isaiah scroll recorded for us in Luke 4, notice that in that sermon Jesus mentions the Syrian general by name. He knew Naaman. Jesus knows the story and sees himself as a successor to Elisha, that he too is God's healing agent in the world. So these two healers, Elisha and Jesus, and these two healed lepers, Naaman and the nameless one, they stand as reference points in the memory of faith, a guarantee that healing powers flow in God's world. Not all lepers have been healed yet. Not all human ailments have been overcome yet, and nor will they be during our earthly life. But the church clings to these cases of healing and asserts that healing is offered when we go to the source, when we go to Jesus, he who was and is the good shepherd, he who came so that we might have life and have life in all its fullness. We might imagine these two ex-lepers, anticipations of a healed world, singing together about the healing of God that is powerful, even if mysterious and impenetrable. We might imagine these two ex-lepers singing a psalm of thanksgiving, such as Psalm 30. And we, though not yet fully healed, might join in that song, in anticipation, in hope. You turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, that my heart may sing to you and not be silent. As one of the commentators paraphrases this psalm, you turned my mourning into dancing. You took off my hospital gown and dressed me for a party. You revived my life, and I will praise you. It's the story of every healed leper. It's the story of every failed person who turns to the goodness of God in order to have their life restored and made new. So imagine all of us, either healed or waiting to be healed, joining in this song of the ex-lepers, Psalm 30. I will exalt you, Lord. You lifted me out of the depths. Lord, my God, I called to you for help and you healed me. Lord, you brought me up from the grave. You spared me from going down to the pit. Now, this Psalm 30 is honest, and it does not lie about the affliction. But the psalmist believes that that affliction is limited and curbed by the power of God. Weeping may remain for the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. So a lot of the lepers are still in the night, but they wait for the morning when comes healing. And this faith of Elisha and of Jesus and of the church, it's not a moral code, is it? It's not an ideology, our faith. It's rather a performance of transformation, of old made new, of lost found, of dead made alive. And the whole cosmos is filled with the singing of the saints of God, the singing of ex-lepers who attest that the gifts are given from the holy God, gifts that make for life. And now let's dare to extrapolate one more step from what I'm saying here. One more step from these leper stories. While these are stories about identifiable persons, let's say this, that the world in which we live is sick with leprosy. That the structures in some ways look like they're on their way to collapse. We sometimes feel we're on our way to chaos and death, and that the usual authorities do not know what to do. But Jesus sent his disciples to precisely such places. He said to them, as you go, preach this message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. The power manifest in Elisha and in Jesus is entrusted then to Jesus' disciples. It's the task of the followers of Jesus to be channels for the Holy Spirit's healing power in this world, a world on its way to death. The promise is that restoration will come. The promise is that God is not yet finished with his healing work in our world. When Rosemary and I were with you last year, we were of course talking about France, and we were reminding you that France is now the only economically developed country in which BMS still has a team. And that's because one of BMS's three commitments is to focus on the world's least evangelized communities. We reminded you of France's hyper-secularism, of its rather sad ranking as having the world's fourth most atheistic population, something over 20% of people affirming that they're declared atheists. We spoke of the strength of Islam in France, way beyond the overall figure in Europe of 5%. Those of Muslim origin in France account for some 12.5% of the population. We told you how much smaller the evangelical church is in France compared to here in the UK, even though our two countries have a very similar population. So France is very much in need of the good news that in Jesus, life can be restored and made new. The good news that in Jesus, the force of life overwhelmed the power of death. The good news that in Jesus, healing is offered. When we go to the source, that good shepherd who came that we might have life and have it to the full. We made reference earlier to the deep disorder that marks our world. And you've no doubt seen in the media all the yellow vest protests that have been happening in France over this past year. You'll have seen the way in which they frequently degenerated into violence. Such a sense of discontent and frustration, of people feeling forgotten. Their complaints concerning the growing economic inequalities and the growing sense of injustice generally in French society. There's a French sociologist, Gérard Mermet, who spent his whole career observing and analysing and reporting on French society. And this is what he writes. The French are suffering from an anxiety, from a chronic frustration, from a fear, from an insecurity that neither the politicians nor the other leaders in society are able to relieve. But the church in France carries and embodies God's message of transformation, of old made new, of lost found, of dead made alive again. Many of you will know that Rosemary's and my role amongst the French Baptists is to give a national lead on church planting and also on trying to revitalize congregations that are not brand new, but that have, for whatever reason, become quite small. In that national role, a highlight for us at the last Baptist Assembly was when one of our church plants was formally recognized as a fully fledged Baptist Federation church. The Basque Coast Baptist Church began in 2003 in the home of a French couple, a local couple. And this new work was supported by the next nearest Baptist church, even though that was some 125 miles away in Bordeaux. Over the next 16 years, five different mission agencies, including BMS, would send personnel or funds. But the French Baptist too sent both people and money. In 2006, some young adults from Strasbourg, that's, if you know your geography, that's a long way off, up in the northeast corner in Alsace, they left there and went to the southwest corner in the Basque Coast, leaving behind their families and their friends and their churches, having to find new jobs and so forth. But they did that in order to help out. And then in 2012, the other Baptist churches of France got together to provide a five-year grant that enabled the Basque Coast Church to call its first pastor. And that's him there, a guy called Junior. And then, as I say, this most recent assembly, we've been celebrating the fact that the church has become a fully fledged Baptist church, you know, with a good degree of maturity, both spiritually and financially. And this time scale, you know, of 16 years, that's not uncommon. The involvement of different people and mission agencies, that's not uncommon either in France. Church planting tends to take time and demand perseverance. In addition to our national role, Rosemary's and my time is divided between doing church planting ourselves locally in a place called Gif-sur-Yvette, just on the southern edge of Paris, and then also trying to revitalize an older congregation on the North Brittany coast in a place called Morley. So that's been our situation these past 2 years, dividing our time between these two locations. They're about 6 driving hours apart, one from the other. The revitalizing work in Morley has been going quite well these last 2 years as we've aimed to build up the believers and to help them as they reach out with the Christian message into their community. As well as a lot of small group work, we've invited a number of colleagues to come along for a weekend to take the services, perhaps to lead a seminar in different ways to build up the Christians. And then also we have organized a series of bigger, more public events which have given us an opportunity to raise the church's profile in the community and to kind of reach out and draw, connect with people in different ways as we draw them into these different events that have been happening. So we're really pleased to report that things have been going well in Morley. The church congregation has been growing steadily. And even last weekend, the last Sunday before we left, we were welcoming in 4 new church members. So that was a great thing to be doing on Pentecost Sunday. In terms of the church plant closer to our home, It was a joy for us to see our first baptisms at the beginning of the year. That was about 16 months after we'd started from scratch, the two of us, with our colleague Christine and one other couple. We began from nothing, just the five of us, and 16 months later, it was really great to have a couple of baptisms. One was Leah. She's a recent university graduate, soon to become a mum for the first time. And this is what Leah said during her testimony. "I was talking with a Christian friend at university about our lives. She offered to pray for me, that God would help me and bless me. I was so surprised, and even more so when she prayed for me right there and then, out in the open. But 3 weeks later, I was still thinking about that prayer. I came to realize that I believed in God and that I wanted to know God. And that's when I made contact with Philip and Rosemary." Then another of those baptized was called Audrey. She's a research geneticist. And this is what Audrey said in her testimony. "I was a fundamentalist atheist, but have become a person of deep faith following an encounter with God. I've been changed, a complete turnaround. The way I relate to the world and to other people has been transformed. My eyes have been opened. I started to read the New Testament, which I'd never opened before, in order to discover Jesus and Jesus' teaching. What a discovery. The more I read, the more I found it irresistible. My heart was touched. My mind was convinced. If you ask me today if I believe in God, my answer is, no, I don't believe. I know. I learned that I had a creator whom I'd never known about, who had adopted me, and that Jesus was the door and the way to him. And now I have met with the Lord. I've been reborn. My life has begun again. And I know that if I remain in him, he will remain in me." Let's go back to our Bible passages. The two healers, Elisha and Jesus, and the two healed lepers, Naaman and the nameless one. As I say, they stand as reference points in the history of faith. I guarantee that healing powers flow in God's world. Not all sufferers have been healed yet, but the church clings to these cases of healing and asserts that health-giving power of Jesus overcomes the contagious disease of leprosy. We assert that the power of creation nullifies the threat of chaos. We assert that healing is offered when we come to the source, to Jesus, who came that we might have life and have it to the full. France is very much in need of this good news, as of course is Croxley Green, as of course is Hertfordshire, England. In our respective contexts, each marked in many ways by a disorder, let's seek to carry and embody God's message of transformation, of old made new, of lost found, of dead made alive. That's my very simple message for you this morning, a message of encouragement to remind you that God is not yet finished with his healing work. And sisters and brothers, neither are we.